Support for this public radio podcast comes from KeyBank, focused knowledge, customized solutions, and the resources of an entire bank. Because the best solutions fit around a business's needs. More at key.com/corporate.
Hot dogs, fireworks, money.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. So are you heading off to work this morning? I'm guessing you might be if you're up this early. But some folks are taking advantage of the midweek holiday to create a mini vacation. Lisa Roth tells us what this means for business.
It's certainly not the traditional three-day weekend, and it doesn't have the ease of a Tuesday or Thursday holiday where taking the extra bridge day is no big deal. But a AAA survey says plenty of people are still using the Wednesday holiday to snag a few extra days off. The association's Christine Brown says most of the people surveyed plan to be away for an average of 6 days.
People are planning on spending a good amount of time in a new destination. So they'll be spending money at hotels. They'll be spending money at restaurants.
While that's good news for business, Brown says don't expect Americans to be spending willy-nilly all week long.
Because of the fuel prices, people are probably going to be scaling back in other ways in terms of how much money they spend at restaurants and at hotels.
Of course, they might want to splurge at that most American tradition of them all, the 4th of July sale. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Wall Street's open for business this morning to start the third quarter. Can't complain too much about the second quarter. The Dow gained more than 1,000 points in the last 3 months. The NASDAQ put on 181. The S&P 500 added 82. Today, Asian stocks climbed about 0.5% overall. The European markets have opened lower. Now that it's nice and hot out, it's a great time to start thinking about heating oil. I'm not kidding. This is the time when homeowners can lock down heating oil prices for the winter. But it's a gamble, as Steve Tripoli explains.
Shane Sweet with the industry group New England Fuel Institute says locking in your oil price early makes sense given recent history.
If you looked at it over the past 10 years, I think most dealers would tell you that it's generally been a smart thing to do.
But there are no guarantees. Many of last year's lock-in customers lost money when the price of oil fell late last winter. Still, Sweet says there's a lot to be said for knowing your price in advance.
It's about budgeting. I think it's about peace of mind.
So are lots of folks buying peace of mind this year?
The interest doesn't seem to be as high as it has been in years past, but after you've had a relatively warm winter, that's not uncommon.
But last year's weather isn't a good guide to upcoming oil prices. The better question is how much you want or need price stability. Right now, the government's predicting that heating oil will cost around $2.59 early next year. I'm Steve Tripoli for Marketplace.
Over the weekend, 7-Eleven turned a dozen of its stores into Quickie Marts. Though, Quickie Mart is the name of the convenience store in The Simpsons. This is part of a campaign to promote The Simpsons movie, which comes out in a few weeks. You can buy Buzz Cola and Squishies, just like in the show. Even though The Simpsons make fun of 7-Eleven, the company paid for the promotion.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management, Mellon.com. By the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with Mended Hearts to provide online and hospital support to newly diagnosed heart disease patients. You can learn more at mendedhearts.org. And by Reuters, delivering news and information that reaches over 1 billion people every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters.
Economics has been called the dismal science. But who says it has to be gray and boring? In fact, there's a whole genre of books that tries to connect economics to our daily lives. Latest one is called The Economic Naturalist by econ professor Robert Frank. It looks at confounding little questions through an economic lens. For example, why is there a light in your refrigerator but not in your freezer? All right, Robert, let's start with that one.
Okay, that's true about most refrigerators. And the cost-benefit principle says you should do something if the benefit exceeds the costs. Here, the cost of putting a light's the same in either compartment. Since you open the refrigerator many, many times more often than the freezer, the benefit of having a light there is just much greater.
All right, cost-benefit. Now, how about this one? Why are some fuel doors on the driver's side of the car and some on the passenger side?
The fact that when you rent a car, you don't know where the gas filler door is one of the great annoyances of modern life. You
exactly.
pull in at the wrong side of the pump. It's a good thing, though, that some of the cars have them on the left and some have them on the right. If you imagine all of them being on the driver's side, that means on the right-hand side of the pump, there'd be a long line. All the pumps on the left-hand side would be empty. I don't think manufacturers did it for that reason, but if they hadn't done it this way, for whatever reason they did it, then somebody would need to come up with this as a scheme for diffusing the long lines on the one side.
When students hear a story like that, are they really making a connection between that and economic principles?
Most of these examples originated from an assignment I give my students called the Economic Naturalist Writing Assignment. And what they have to do is pose an interesting question based on something they've actually experienced out there in the world. They've got to look for economics at work in their daily lives. And then once they've posed an interesting question, their task is in one page to try and answer it using economic reasoning.
What kind of evidence do you have that this actually works for students?
What we do know is that the conventional approach doesn't work. The tests given 6 months later reveal no permanent change in the level of economic knowledge from students who've taken the traditional courses. What I can tell you anecdotally is that students come back 10 years later for class reunion, and when they stop by to see me, the first thing they want to tell me about is the questions they've posed and answered. Why do the Braille dots get put on keypad buttons for drive-up cash machines? One of my students asked that question. The answer he suggested was really simple. He said, once you've made the machines with the Braille dots on them for the walk-up locations, it's just cheaper to make them all the same way rather than keep two inventories and worry about which ones go to which destinations. That's an interesting story. You can repeat that. People will hear it. They'll repeat it. Everyone's getting a little bit better at thinking in cost-benefit terms when they hear a story like that.
Robert Frank, the author of The Economic Naturalist. Thank you.
Scott, good to talk with you.
In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening and enjoy your Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.